weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home. Cambridge
105 Drive through until 6 o'clock, and we welcome back Dom Smith after a few months away from the show. Hello, Dom.
Oh, good evening, Julian. Great to be back.
Welcome back. But we're not talking pubs this time around. We're talking museums.
We kind of did pubs, I think, and of course we got through all of the pubs in the city over the course of 2.5 years, so didn't quite feel right to go back and start doing them all again. So yes, museums. I was amazed to discover there are so many museums in our city. A lot of the university faculties have these really small museums sort of hidden away that almost nobody's
heard of. And that's
the
thing, they're hidden down side streets, so you have absolutely no idea that they're there.
Exactly. So I thought, well, why not make our way round and actually go and find out what they are. Of course, we're starting with the Fitzwilliam tonight, which is one of the larger ones and very findable.
Very, very much so. And they're celebrating an anniversary this year as well.
That's right. It's their bicentenary this year. They were founded in 1816. So it's very interesting to go there. And
I see that by Mr. Fitzwilliam has kind of started it off.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, I went and spoke to Rachel Sinfield. She's the head of communication and engagement at the museum. And I started by asking her exactly that point about how the museum came into being.
The museum came into existence because the 7th Viscount Fitzwilliam of Merion left a bequest to the University of Cambridge of his art collection and also £100,000 to be able to build a building that could house this collection. And that he died in the 4th of February 1816.
Right, so that's that bequest was 200 years ago in February. So you mentioned this was originally an art collection. What about the actual artefacts, the various bits of pottery and that sort of thing? Where have they all come from?
Well, in in Lord Fitzwilliam's original bequest, he left old master paintings, also musical scores, illuminated manuscripts and prints and drawings. So it was quite a diverse collection. But that original collection has, I think, inspired other collectors to leave their collections to us in turn. And, of course, this is an ongoing thing. It's part of the history of the museum, the different collections that have been added to the main collection as the years have gone by.
Lovely. And has the museum always been in this very ornate building here on Trumpington Street, or is it has it moved around over the years?
It has moved around a bit over the years. Originally, the museum was housed in Free School Lane, and it actually there was an architectural competition to design a building, and the foundation stone was laid in 1837. So that's the same year that Queen Victoria came to the throne. But the doors didn't open to the public until 1848.
Presumably, over the last 200 years, the museum has changed quite a bit. These days, it's probably most known as a tourist attraction in Cambridge. Presumably, that wasn't the case 150 years ago. Has the museum changed in its role over time?
I think the museum was, in fact, originally... it's always been a university museum, and it still is a university museum, so it is there to help for the education of the students of the university and their relevant courses. But it's also a public museum, and it has been open to the public from the beginning. But I think its role has become now that it's really one of the, I think, the main landmark museum in Cambridge in terms of its physical size, and so therefore we feel we have a role for all members of the community in Cambridge and beyond. We have many international visitors too.
Yes, and you mentioned the museum is part of the university. Does that mean that there is still research done here and actual scholarly work as well?
Yes, indeed. We have 5 collection divisions. They are the Department of Antiquities. We also have the Department of Applied Arts. There's paintings, drawings and prints, coins and medals, and then manuscripts and printed books. And we have scholarly collection staff in each of those divisions undertaking research into the collection and working with colleagues throughout the university.
Sounds very interesting. So, as we mentioned, it's the Fitzwilliam's bicentenary this year. And I believe you've got a book coming out that's telling the story of the museum in a bit more detail.
Of course. We are trying to celebrate the bicentenary in all sorts of ways. Our Assistant Director of Collections, Lucilla Byrne, has written a book about the history of the museum, which is going to be launched at the beginning of February. So that is one addition and a wonderful history to the museum. But also we're going to be celebrating the bicentenary by exciting programmes that we're going to be developing, and indeed information available through our website.
And I think there's an exhibition that's going to be starting that's related to the book, which I believe is starting in February, is that correct?
Indeed. We've got several temporary exhibitions for this year, but the one relating to the book is in our Octagon Gallery, and it's going to open on the 4th of February, so on the anniversary of the Viscount's death and the beginning of our museum with the bequest. And it's going to tell the history of the museum with certain selected objects and have a timeline round so that people can compare the history of the museum with related events in society at the time.
Sounds very interesting. I'll look forward to going along to that. Final question then. Do you have any favourite pieces in the museum or things that you think that our listeners must come and see if they haven't been to the Fitzwilliam before?
That's quite a difficult question when we've got 500,000 objects. I do have personal favourites. I'm very fond of the Impressionist Gallery, but I'm also very excited. The collection's so diverse. We have a wonderful ancient Egyptian collection, and part of that is going to be on display in another exhibition opening in February, on the 23rd of February, called Death on the Nile. And that's going to follow the history of 4,000 years of the development of the Egyptian coffin. So I think there are many things to please all tastes, I think, at the museum. I'd recommend a visit.
Lovely. Rachel Sinfield, the Head of Communications and Engagement at the Fitzwilliam Museum, thank you very much. So, yes, and thanks very much to Rachel for taking the time and speaking to us a few days ago.
It's 105 Drive at 5:47. Dom Smith is here, kind of guiding us around some of the museums which are around the city, with particular reference to the Fitzwilliam this time around.
That's right, and in fact, it's several years since I last went into the Fitzwilliam, and it's great to have the opportunity to go and get that little bit.
It's always the danger where you live somewhere, you don't actually go to what's on your own doorstep. But if you were, I don't know, for the sake of argument, on holiday in Stockholm, you'd probably the first thing that you'd do was hunt out the local museums.
Absolutely, absolutely, and when we were researching doing this feature, just the number of little museums I'd never heard of before as well, it was absolutely.
Do we know how many there are, sort of ish? Because I've probably missed a few.
I've certainly got a list of 12, which is enough to get through the year.
Okay, that's good.
There are more as well, so yes. Anyway, for those who haven't perhaps been to the Fitzwilliam before or recently, the collections are arranged over two floors. They're kind of broadly split between having the physical artifacts on the ground floor and then the paintings upstairs. Now, despite the vast number of items in the museum, it's a large building, so there's a decent sense of space in there. The items are well arranged, and I really appreciated how some of the signs that explained a little bit more about what I was looking at. It wasn't just, this is a pot from Cyprus that's aged about this, but there was signs explaining how Cypriot pottery is different from Greek pottery, or another sign talked about the decisions to have to make during restoration of a piece, whether the artist is actually going to change the artwork to make it clearer at all, which I had no idea they even...
So they would actually consider tinkering around with something.
Apparently so, and there was an example of I think it was a Greek pot in the exhibition where that had been done.
The famous one which fell down the stairs, wasn't there, I think? It had a bit of help, I think.
It wasn't that one.
Okay.
Anyway, having just two floors, it did mean that some of the individual rooms didn't necessarily flow that well into each other, and particularly jarring, I found the single doorway that separates the ancient Cypriot pottery from the 18th century European porcelain, which is obviously a somewhat different style. But anyway, upstairs, as I said, there's also the paintings, but also, just until the end of this month, in January, there's a fascinating little display showing the history of World War II through the medium of currency.
Ooh,
so there's things like banknotes from prisoner of war camps and even the British internment camps, for example. So, yeah, that's well worth it. It's just two little display cabinets, but I certainly spent several minutes looking through it.
And how long is that particular element running till?
That's open until the 31st of January.
OK, time to go and have a quick look at that bit then.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of the artwork, though, there's works by Turner, Constable and Blake, all the way through to the 20th century artists that I don't profess to understand them. frankly. Anyway, if I were visiting with children, I thought it might take a little effort to keep them entertained through all the pots and the paintings. You know, there are several rooms, but then there's the armoury. And there's plenty of suits and armour and swords, so I'm sure that you could keep her.
And they do things where for children and families. I know because my sister takes my niece there from time to time.
Yeah, exactly. So the first Saturday of every month, there are Family First Saturdays. So these are activities for younger visitors explicitly. They also have activities for teenagers too, and this sounds very exciting. There's a half-day course on how to make an Egyptian coffin coming up in March as part of the Cambridge Science Festival. So I think that was aimed at 13 to 18-year-olds. So if you are looking for something to do in March on a Saturday, half-day course on making an Egyptian coffin. I'm sure it'll come in useful later in life.
Precisely.
They also run audio-described tours for the blind and partially sighted as well, which I've thought to be a very interesting thing. Now, finally, coming up on the 17th of February, the Fitzwilliam is one of several Cambridge museums taking part in the 10th Twilight at the Museums event. Now, this is an opportunity to explore the museum following what they call a light-inspired trail. And I gather some of the museums are going to be sort of explore the museum by torchlight. There's going to be also some illuminations against the facade of the Fitzwilliam. So that could be very interesting. That's on the 17th of February. Admission to the museum is free. It's open from 10 to 5 Tuesdays to Saturdays and also 12 to 5 on Sundays. It's closed on Mondays apart from bank holidays. And for more information, www.fitzmuseum.cam.ac.uk.
Okay, Dom, thank you very much for that. So we'll make this a regular part, I think, of Drive over the next few months. So Fitzwilliam, this time around, do you have any ideas where you're going next time?
I don't quite know yet. I'm looking at the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology as a possible one.